Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
In this week's podcast extra, we want to introduce you to a new show that's being made by the team who work next to us at WNYC. For those of you far from New York City, Brian Lehrer has been beloved by listeners for decades as an astute observer and conscientious broker of daily events. His new show, Impeachment, a daily podcast, will help you understand the political twists, historical context, and legal stakes at the heart of the impeachment inquiry into Donald Trump. I'm Bob Garfield, and I so endorse Brian Lehrer.
He is ongoingly violating his oath of office and abusing his power. We have to impeach this president, and the majority of Americans not only support impeachment, they support removal.
This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is Wednesday, October 16th. Every single candidate that was on last night's debate stage now supports the House's impeachment inquiry. It's one of the issues where they stand fully united. And of course, the impeachment news has continued to develop over the last 24 hours. I'm thinking two things today. The pace of the new revelations is breathtaking, and it isn't stopping yet. Think about how slow the Mueller investigation felt, right? This Ukraine investigation is absolutely flying right now, and Team Trump cannot control it. They are losing the PR war every day right now as one government official after another sounds the alarm about something terribly rotten taking place. And second, there are so many new names to get to know in the last few weeks, including a new one testifying before Congress every single day this week. So we'll continue to try to introduce you to these people and their place in the story. But we promise not to lose the forest for the trees. Justice will take place only if people remember the main plot. Trump asked Ukraine to collude with him on political interference to hurt Joe Biden after 2 years of denying that he colluded with Russia to hurt Hillary Clinton. And to boot, Trump seems to have bribed or extorted his way to Ukrainian collusion by offering, of all things, changes in actual U.S. foreign policy. The parade of witnesses this week is intended to see how direct the evidence is for the quid pro quo. Our guest on impeachment today is New York Times Justice Department correspondent Katie Benner. Hi, Katie. Thanks for doing this. Nice to have you on today.
Nice to be here.
The testimony yesterday was by a senior State Department official in charge of Ukraine policy named George Kent, one of these new names, who said he was one of those shoved aside and told to lie low on Ukraine, even though Ukraine was part of his job, so that the shadow foreign policy team, including Rudy Giuliani, could really run things. Where do you see George Kent's testimony fitting into the big picture?
So George Kent's testimony is part of this mosaic being put together by former State Department officials, former and current State Department officials, who are all contributing a little bit of knowledge to this idea that the State Department was at the heart of the president's attempts to get personal things for himself using the levers of government. You know, we should probably take a step back and remember again why the State Department is so important. Its primary function? To further the policy, political, national security, and military interests of the United States without the use of force, to work with other countries, and to try to find ways to get what we want in a way that helps other people as well. But first and foremost, what is going to benefit this country in a national security, in a military, in a policy way? And what they're all saying is that the president decided this very, very powerful lever of the U.S. government could also help him. And they're each contributing a little bit to that picture. And George Kent actually contributed pretty powerfully to it by saying that even though he was an expert in this area, even though he should be running and helping contribute to conversations with Ukraine, there was something about him, about the way that he wanted to represent the government first, that made him an unappealing messenger. And instead, three other people who were more in line with the president's agenda would take over.
And we've now heard similar stories from Marie Yovanovitch, the former Trump ambassador to Ukraine, fired to enable this scheme, and Fiona Hill, a former Trump Ukraine expert, and via Fiona Hill's testimony, National Security Advisor John Bolton, who was also shoved aside in favor of this Rudy Giuliani crew, and now George Kent. When it's so many people who Trump appointed, and these are all Trump appointees, I think one of the big plot points here is that it's getting harder for Trump to hang the revulsion with his Ukraine scheme on some kind of anti-Trump deep state. So I'm curious, how much do you think we're seeing the deep state defense crumble before our eyes this very week?
Well, it's interesting. The deep state defense is crumbling quickly for a lot of people. Of course, you have to remember that over at the White House, they have not yet come up with new talking points. It's really fascinating to watch how you have, on one hand, over on Capitol Hill, very close to where I'm sitting right now, these closed-door meetings where lawmakers are gathering a lot of information. We only know a tiny little bit of the things that they're being told. These witnesses are coming in and testifying for hours and hours and hours. Down Pennsylvania Avenue, over at the White House, they do not know what's happening. And it's clear that inside the White House, there's it's almost an incoherent response to what's going on because they're having a really hard time, to your point earlier, controlling the messaging. Too much information is dribbling out too fast. They're always on their back foot. And then two, some of the old messaging not only does not apply in this moment, like the deep state defense, but who knows where we'll end up. Again, they don't know where this testimony is heading. All they know is that people are defying them. They are going to talk to lawmakers, and they're painting a very unflattering portrait of the president and of essentially his fixer, Rudy Giuliani.
Today's witness is Michael McKinley, another new name to the general public. McKinley resigned, and this is quite a story if you haven't heard it yet, folks. McKinley resigned suddenly last week as a very top aide to Secretary of State Pompeo. So, Katie Benner, any idea what Michael McKinley might want to expose today?
Well, Michael McKinley is an interesting figure because of his role and his proximity to Pompeo. We know that Pompeo was on the call with Ukraine and that he originally did not want that known. So McKinley is ostensibly the kind of figure who would know a lot more about the things that Pompeo might not have already publicly said. We do know that he's going to tell lawmakers that he was for a long time concerned that people at the State Department, career diplomats, were being mistreated while he worked there, and that for political reasons, they were being abused, and some of them had their careers derailed, including Marie Yovanovitch, who was the former ambassador to Ukraine.
And tomorrow, it's Gordon Sondland, a very key player whose name people are starting to know because he's that Trump donor from the hotel industry in Portland, Oregon, who got rewarded with a job of ambassador to the EU. Now, the EU does not include Ukraine, so that's not officially been in his portfolio, but he was very involved with Rudy in the pressure to get Ukraine to investigate Biden, according to the text messages that have been revealed and other evidence. So since he's up to his ears in this, Katie, why do you think Sondland is even agreeing to testify tomorrow?
Well, I mean, there are a couple of reasons why we could presume that Sondland would want to testify. One is that everybody around him is testifying, and it is inevitable that his name is probably being brought up in these closed-door hearings, and he would probably, if he's smart, want to have his own version of events in the record. Two, he is in those text messages, and in those text messages that you just mentioned, somebody says to him point blank, "Listen, Sondland, I do not think that it's a good idea to hold back aid, hold back assistance to Ukraine, basically subvert the policy that we believe is best for this country, just so President Trump can get something that he wants, which is something for his own political personal gain and investigation of one of his rivals." And Sondland, interestingly, in that text message exchange, writes a very formal message back that says, you know, that is not how I see it. It's not how the president sees it. Please call me. You know, taking this conversation offline, it's gotten too hot. So there is a question about what Sondland believes he was doing and what the president believes he was doing. And those are the questions that Gordon Sondland's going to have to answer.
Now, you cover the Justice Department, and one of the big bombshells came last week when two of Rudy's associates got arrested and charged by Trump's own U.S. attorney in New York with buying influence in the U.S. government on behalf of Ukrainians. Today is a congressional deadline for them to turn over documents regarding communications with the White House, these two defendants, Igor Fruman and Lev Parnas. Do you know more specifically what Congress is seeking from them?
You know, Congress, again, they want to know what the Trump administration was doing in its communications with Ukraine. You know, were there deals being made? Was there some sort of quid pro quo? But what's also interesting is that this really puts the focus back again on Rudy Giuliani, right? Again, people say they don't really know in what capacity Giuliani was doing some of these things. Giuliani has said he was doing it with the blessing of the State Department. He's also said he was acting on behalf of President Trump. He said he was acting in private capacity. But what's clear is he is in every single conversation. And so these two men who are so closely tied to Giuliani, they would be really interesting witnesses. Now, this is a key wrinkle for the Justice Department. They have charged these two associates of Giuliani. They suspect them of committing a crime. As the Southern District of New York gets closer and closer to these two men, the Ukrainian oligarchs who worked with them, and anybody who would be interested in buying influence in the United States, again, that makes us wonder, we have to ask the question, will Trump's own Justice Department bump up against Rudy Giuliani? And if so, how hard will they go after him? We already know that he's a person of interest and that they are looking at his own actions and whether or not he was acting unlawfully as he tried to further the interests of people in countries like Ukraine.
Is Giuliani, who was once the U.S. attorney in Manhattan himself, now under investigation by his old office?
I mean, that is what we've heard. We've heard that he's certainly a person of interest. People want to know what he's been up to. Now, this also presents a quandary, as you can imagine, for the Justice Department, for the Southern District of New York. They need to go where the evidence takes them. And if the evidence is pointing to Rudy Giuliani having committed any crime, done anything wrong, they would be obligated to go down that road. That is what prosecutors do. And certainly at the Southern District of New York, they take pride, very much so, in going hard after people who may have committed a crime. Now, the president, you can imagine, would not want Rudy Giuliani investigated. We saw this during the Mueller investigation, which was a criminal investigation. Remember, impeachment's not a criminal process. It is a political process. During the Mueller investigation, this criminal investigation, every time somebody closer to Trump's inner circle would be investigated, we would see charges brought against them. It caused great agita within the White House, and President Trump really got upset. So it's going to be interesting to see if the president starts to talk about the prosecutors at the Southern District of New York and the Attorney General Bill Barr in the same way that he spoke about Mueller's prosecutors and former Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Every time those investigations got close to his inner circle, he railed against those people. He criticized them, and he basically told them to stop the investigation. We have not seen that yet with Mr. Barr, but it is to be seen how President Trump responds to the idea that somebody almost as close to him as any person could get is now a person of interest in investigations at SDNY.
Well, Barr's on your beat as Justice Department correspondent. What do you think his place in all this is? Because his reputation has been that though he's the Attorney General of the United States in name, he's another Trump defense attorney. In fact, is it any different in this case than it was during the Mueller investigation or the way he spun the release of the Mueller report?
Well, it's really interesting that you say that because it's clear that the president thinks of Bill Barr as one of his personal attorneys. You can hear that in the transcript, or not really, it wasn't an exact transcript. You can hear that in the recreated conversation that the White House released of the call between President Trump and Ukraine's President Zelensky, right? The way he speaks about Bill Barr, he speaks of him in the same breath with Rudy Giuliani. He says, these are my two guys. They're going to help me in these investigations, and I want you to help them. So it's clear that Trump thinks of Barr as somebody who will do anything to personally defend him, not defend the presidency, not defend the White House, but personally defend him. For Barr, I think that the way that the investigations into these figures in Ukraine and into people like Giuliani, that's going to be his real test. You know, is he the president's lawyer or is he the attorney general?
Another piece of news from the last day is that both Giuliani and Vice President Pence are refusing to turn over documents or testify in the investigation. They claim the impeachment inquiry is invalid because the full House did not vote to authorize it. Now, we've said previously here, I'll say it again, so people are very clear that such a vote is not required under the law. It's not required by the Constitution. It's not required by House rules. But last night, Speaker Nancy Pelosi doubled down on her refusal to take such a vote voluntarily like this.
We're not here to call bluffs. We're here to find the truth, to uphold the Constitution of the United States. This is not a game for us. This is deadly serious.
So why not call Trump's bluff, Katie? I imagine Pelosi has the votes. Then Pence and Rudy and all the others would be out on a limb, and they'd have to turn over all these documents and come in and testify if they're good to their word.
Yeah, okay. But let's remember the advantage the House has in not having this vote and having their closed-door hearings and moving at this pace. The witnesses, they can speak very frankly. They do not worry about sort of the infotainment aspect of a live hearing, the performative aspect of it. They're less incentivized to coordinate with other witnesses, and they can get a lot of information really, really quickly. By not holding the vote, they do open themselves up to this criticism that the Republicans have launched, which is that the proceeding itself is not legitimate because of the lack of a vote. They're calling it a secret trial. They're calling it a smear campaign. But when all the Republicans have is that talking point, remember, none of them have come out and actually defended the president on the merits of his actions. None of them have defended Rudy Giuliani on the merits of his actions. That is actually, I mean, that is not a concern that I think is going to stop Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff. That does not hurt them because ostensibly, the Republicans would say that regardless. They would find another way to say that this impeachment inquiry, this process, is not legitimate, and they would probably still stonewall. And if you want articles of impeachment out by Thanksgiving, you're going to move really fast. You're not going to start taking things through the courts.
The main plot, as I see it, as we wrap up for today, the House is now looking for as specific a smoking gun as they can find, that Trump was tying military aid or a White House meeting to Ukraine's president agreeing to investigate the Bidens, and a conspiracy theory from the 2016 election. The transcript of their phone call basically says it when Trump says, "I want you to do me a favor, though," after President Zelensky asks for military aid. Then there are those text messages that got revealed that also indicate that. But how much more do you think they can seal the quid pro quo deal with if they get more documentary evidence?
Well, first, this is the danger with any investigation, and this is why everybody hates being investigated, is you never know what is going to be churned up in the process, right? You have all these people coming in to speak with the House. Who knows what they will say? They could lead us in a completely different path. We've seen this with lots of different types of investigations where a person who is under fire and looks guilty decides to give up somebody else on a totally new charge. So that is the big risk right now for the White House. And then in terms of the quid pro quo, you know, keep in mind, you don't need a quid pro quo in order to allege that the president of the United States is subverting U.S. security, U.S. foreign policy, and abdicating U.S. power on the global stage in order to get a very tiny personal errand done that might help him in the election, right? You don't even need the quid pro quo to say that those things are bad. So in some ways, you could look at the quid pro quo aspect and say, that's just icing on the cake. The Republicans have wanted people to focus on the idea of the quid pro quo. They've wanted to turn our attention there so they can say it doesn't exist. Putting that aside, though, those other three things I just mentioned, if you are looking at what should a president do and what is presidential behavior, you could make the argument, many, many legal experts believe, that in and of itself, subverting U.S. policy, security, abdicating our power, weakening us within the world, could be a high crime and misdemeanor.
Katie Benner, Justice Department correspondent for the New York Times. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon at WNYC.org. Tomorrow, we'll break down what we know about today's House hearing drama, testimony by a top aide to Secretary of State Pompeo, Michael McKinley, who suddenly resigned last week and now has walked voluntarily into Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff's house. We'll see what we can learn from him on Impeachment, a daily podcast, tomorrow.
On this week's On the Media, we'll be asking the question, what do we really know about the Kurdish people apart from their cooperation in our military actions? I'm Bob Garfield. See you Friday.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.